Hi folks, welcome to another one of our political chats, and this week we're going to be talking about the demographic clock that is ticking and how you can already see the problems occurring. Not the demographics that you might think either. It's not even necessarily, although partially, about native versus non-native. It's actually about the aging out of the boomers that we're going to get to.
Is how we used to talk about demographics before 1997.
Correct.
Yes.
But before we begin, of course, come to our live event that is on Saturday, the 11th of April, this Saturday. So you've only got a few more days. We're going to have fun. We're going to have beer. We're going to have a few protesters, apparently, according to the police. But they've assured us that everything will go smoothly. So link in the description. We will see you there. Right. Let's get in some polling. So here's a poll from Good Growth Foundation. I'm not actually familiar with Good Growth Foundation, but 27%, not great. Labour 20%, Conservatives 19%, Greens on 15%, and Lib Dems on 12%. Modelled out, that looks like Reform not getting a government and would have to lean on the Conservatives to get
a majority. That's a curious result. I'm not sure Greens will be that low, but...
Yeah, well...
But, I mean, this is the problem when you've got five different parties with not actually much in it between them. You get slight imbalances. And more to the point, how exactly do those votes shake out across the constituencies? You can produce with slightly different assumptions, wildly different numbers.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I mean, I'm glad I don't have to do predictions.
Yes.
Right now, one thing about political commentary is that predictions are 10 a penny and worth less than that. They very rarely age well, and you learn very quickly not to try and live and die on your predictions. And so I just try not to make predictions, frankly, because you end up with egg on your face, and everyone ends up with egg on their face. So it's just not worth it. I mean, look at Rory Stewart, who's currently burning his own credibility by saying, no, Kamala's going to win. No, this is going to happen. Brexit's going to fail. It's like... What have you predicted that's been correct?
Looking at Rory Stewart is always going to be a losing game because
agreed.
He looks like an old woman with AIDS or something. I don't know.
But, a bit harsh, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, so then we've got another one from Find Out Now. Reform on 26, Greens on 20, Conservative and Labour, third and fourth place, no one cares, and then Other at 7%, which is interesting. And then I thought, okay, well, they're reasonably strong polls from Reform.
Yep.
So let's go to the average of the polls, the poll of polls on Politico. Now, we've been watching this slowly declining over the past 6 months from, I think, their high of about 31 to now all the way down to 25.
Ouch.
That's really bad. I think it was 24 when I looked earlier, actually. So that's actually gone up slightly, but that's not good.
I mean, they did have it. If you're polling in the low 30s, that's a win. In this setup,
yes.
I mean, actually, even in a normal election, 31% isn't bad. I mean,
it's not bad, but you could expect the Conservatives and Labour to have something like 42 to 31, respectively, right?
But in this setup, with five different parties, 31 is a commanding win. So they had it, and their continual tact on questionable policies, their continual alienation of the youth vote. It's a self-inflicted wound.
Strange commitment to the boomers, frankly, as their only constituency for some reason. And so, I mean, we called this, about a month ago, that this we were like, look, guys, Farage and Reform are on the downswing. And because of the rails that they've set themselves on, there doesn't seem to be any way they can get off of it. They've chosen their course, they've charted their course, and they've decided to sort of fix the anchor or whatever it is and head in a particular direction by piling the party full of ex-Tories and then committing to the Bank of England, no beyond independence, so no structural changes, and then the recent commitment to the triple lock, for example, which everyone was like, okay, but that's terrible, actually. You need to do a Brokenomics on this.
I absolutely do. I've got, I did an interview recently that goes out next Tuesday, and then I've got an absolute banger interview coming very soon. People are going to love that one.
Like a full episode on the triple lock.
Is absolutely worth it. Because people just don't... You often hear people say things like, okay, well, the UK pension is actually relatively low against say continental Europe. Actually, the share of national spending that goes on pensions is pretty much exactly the same. But people don't quite realise how powerful the triple lock is.
Yes.
That you could have a situation where, and you don't even need to stretch the numbers, where in 15 years' time the pension is going to be double the average wage. Yeah.
You need to...
I do. I absolutely need to do a broken mix on this.
Yeah, you do need to do a proper deep dive on it. Mm. Anyway, like I said, it's nice to see everyone catching up to where we were. Here was Politics Joe, but I saw the Sunday Times podcast and all that, all with the same sort of thing. Again, this is only from 2 days ago, with only 50,000 views. Reform's collapse is inevitable. Yeah, we said that a month ago.
I mean, it's good that if for any reason you miss one of our podcasts,
you can just watch everybody else's podcast a month later. Yeah. But yeah, like I said, the Times said this. I think the New Statesman said something like this as well. Basically, everyone is catching up to where we are because we're paying close attention. But not only that, it's like, how did we know that everyone would be on this point? It's because we were following not just the polls, but what the party itself was actually doing and how that relates to what the electorate are actually feeling. Right.
Well, and really, this turn started when they brought in Naheem Zawahiri.
Yeah.
And then, of course, after that, they brought in a whole bunch more Tories. Yeah. And all of the establishment podcasts were saying, oh, this is a tremendous win for them because
very
now they've got
experience.
Yeah, because they got experience in, and this is an enormous win for them. And we were like, yeah, but that goes against their entire, the entire point of the party. Yeah. It's an insurgent party. Which is taking the regime in?
Yeah, completely the opposite,
yes.
The antithesis of the purpose of the party itself, which Farage seems to have dramatically misread, which is weird.
Yeah.
So anyway, like I said, this we saw this coming because it's not that the numbers were immediate on the face of it, although they weren't good. Mm. So we called this about, what was it, a month and a half ago, something like that, when it was on 28%. We were like, right, okay, this is it going down.
Yeah.
What we were watching was the direction of travel, right? Mm. As in, are you going up or are you going down? And the answer is they're going down. And we saw this, and glad everyone else is getting it. But this came out from Lord Ashcroft polls, and it really made a splash.
Now, ouch.
You can imagine... Just for anyone listening, the Greens on 21.4%.
In first place.
In first place. Reform on 20.9% in second place. The Conservatives on 20.5% in third place. Labour and Lib Dems on fourth and fifth. In irrelevant numbers, frankly. And, I mean, this was a very well-publicised poll. Now, just to be clear, as we've covered before, Lord Ashcroft polling is considered to actually be the worst of British pollsters.
It was at the last election. He nailed Brexit, though. So, I mean, pollsters can go up and down. There was a time when he was the most accurate.
Yes, in one event that wasn't usual, as in it didn't represent...
Well, this election definitely isn't going to be usual.
No, but it wasn't even a general election, is what I mean. You know, it was a one-off event that was very, very strange. But the point
is, when outlier polls start showing up, you can't just dismiss them, because actually a lot of the outlier polls a couple of months ago were showing the decline.
That's correct.
And then it happened.
That's correct. So this could be a harbinger of things to come. And the thing is, the way that the wind is blowing, you can feel the vibe in the air. It's not with Reform.
Well, okay, let's not just go with the numbers. Let's go with the confidence that you actually see. The Green Party are confident in themselves.
Swaggering.
They are swaggering. And they're going out and they're making statements and they're not explaining themselves. Every time I see Reform on TV, they are explaining away an attack line against them. Greens aren't doing that.
And if you're explaining, you're losing. Yeah, exactly. Yes. The Greens, what does Zach Plansley do? He gives them the kind of Chad face, to be honest, the gap-tooth Chad face, and goes, don't care, come and join the Green Party. It's like, that's powerful.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, that's a powerful move. And Farage is on the slippery slope of, no, it's not quite that. No. Yeah. And it's like, no, you don't do that, Nigel. Right?
Well, and he's even got a kind of verbal meme that he goes into this. You see him all the time on speaking to journalists, and he does this wrong
oh,
thing.
Oh, God, yeah.
And he thinks that makes him look strong because he's got this decisive answer. Yeah, but you're explaining away. Yeah. You're having to justify yourself. Zach Polansky and Hannah Spencer and the rest of them, they're not justifying. They're just going out. They're saying their bit. People are responding to it. Now, what they're saying is mad.
Yes.
And the people who agree with them are mental. But that's still momentum.
But the point is that this gives them the sort of vibe-based politics of positivity. Right? Their plan is genuinely evil. I don't know how better I could describe it as, no, they're coming to take your stuff and give it to foreigners.
Yeah.
That's the literal sole plan of the Green Party.
From their perspective, though, it's a positive vision. It's an upbeat message. Yep. Now, let's switch to American politics for a second, but who's won the American elections? It's always a side with a more upbeat policy.
Yes.
It's, change, or it's, we're going to make America great again, or whatever it is. Positive messages do actually win.
Yes, because people are actually looking for something positive in their lives. Mm. So anyway, this brutal poll, it's so far below the average that you've got to be like, okay, that can't be real. But like you said, other polls that were below the average actually were just prescient and have predicted the trend. So just saying. And also, remember that we suggested a while ago now that when Farage gets down to about 18-19% in the polls, he'll probably just quit, right? Because Farage is known for just quitting when things are going a bit south. He likes to sing when he's winning, but otherwise, he's not the guy. So we'll see what happens there. Frankly, I think this is excellent news for people outside of the Westminster uniparty consensus, because this shows that we don't have any challenges to our right, frankly. There's nothing we have to worry about. We are the danger.
We are on the flank.
Yeah, exactly.
We are the Prussians of Waterloo here.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So anyway, this is what it looks like modelled out. And again, just brutal. The Conservatives would win more seats than Reform because of the concentration of their vote. Well, it's the way that the vote's concentrated, isn't it? Because Reform have got a quite a broad sort of quarter of the electorate or so, or fifth of the electorate, but the Conservatives are very focused in the southeast.
I think that depresses me more than the Greens winning.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, like the Greens winning, at least there's change in it.
How disappointing would that be? if the Conservatives have failed every test and yet still win.
But the funny thing about this is, okay, let's say they form a coalition government. Farage has got to go cap in hand to them. They would be the senior partner. It would be Prime Minister Badenoch and Deputy PM Nigel Farage. Like, how embarrassing.
And then Farage would have to stand up on TV every single time saying, oh, yes, under Kemi's leadership and...
Oh, that would be awful, wouldn't it? anyway, so this is what the map would look like. Lots of Greens, obviously, in the diversified and woke areas of the country. Yeah. Fewer Lib Dems, actually, than you'd imagined. Again, stronger showing for the Conservatives. But brutal all over. And, I mean, there's a part of me that's kind of like the Joker. I'm like, yeah, I kind of want to see the chaos. See what happens. But I don't think this will be what happens. I think, frankly, Reform will collapse long before we get to this point.
Yeah.
So let's talk about why. Why are Reform collapsing? Well, I think it's because not only all of the other problems that we've mentioned ad nauseum at this point, the commitment to the triple lock, but also I think the first bite of every meal is with the eye, right? As in the chefs always say, look, if it looks like slop on the plate, people won't want to eat it, even if it's the most delicious slop you've ever seen.
Yes.
And that goes for the renegade right-wing party that's meant to be like, right, the British people at Dunkirk, or, we're fighting back against the Hun or whatever.
Mm.
And it's literal Boris waivers. Literally Boris waivers. Here is a Boris waiver called, was it Aaron Roy, I think, which is a weird name. But he is an Indian, as you can see his nationality down there. He's literally an Indian national who set up a no whites football team.
He does sound like he should be a 17th century Scottish warlord fighting against the English.
Or maybe a pirate or something.
Yes.
Yeah. But he's not the only one. We've got the famous Bangladeshi student visa candidate.
Another Boris waiver.
Adimo Azaduzaman.
Better than
who
I could do.
Will be standing in the Central South Sea. Now, that's weird. And then you've got the next one, which again is another Boris waiver, called Troila Coker.
Well, good luck, Troila Coker. In your upcoming. I like the fact that Farage, his polls started tanking because he brought in a load of Tories, and he was like, "Oh, you don't like the Tories, do you? Well, I'll tell you what,
you like
what
immigrants.
About, yeah, what about the Boris wave? That's what Tories and the Boris wave. That's gonna win you guys over.
Yeah, that's definitely the thing the British public loves the most.
Yes,
and there's
don't just elect the people who gave you the Boris wave. elect the literal Boris Wave as well. Why are we falling in the pool in the polls? Nobody knows. I mean, history.
It's such a persuasive argument. And I'm not trying to cast shade about these candidates themselves individually. I'm sure they're decent, upstanding fellows.
No, I genuinely wish Mr. Coker good luck.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you know, if he does something useful, then great. You know, brilliant. But the point is, he is literally a Nigerian national.
They didn't even bother to give him...
Like, he obviously came here and started this company in 2020. So he's a literal Boris Waver. And it's just, and just like with the previous guy, a literal Boris Waver who came here in 2020 and set up a company.
Nationality Indian.
Yeah, nationality Indian. It's like, why are you're taking...
I mean, again, he's just outdoing the Tories. Because the Tories are like, okay, we're going to get a first-generation Nigerian immigrant. But at least her citizenship is
at least she's a citizen.
Yeah, on paper, at least she's British. Okay.
Yes.
Whereas they're going to one up them by saying, "Oh, you've got a naturalised Nigerian." Well, we've got an actual Nigerian. Like, I mean, where do they go from here? Presumably they actually go to Lagos and they get people to run who haven't even got on the plane to come to England yet. They're just going to, if they win their seat, they're just going to work from home and dial in on Skype from Lagos.
But you've got to explain to Farage, he's not actually running for the leadership of the Conservative Party. Like, what are you doing here, right?
I'm not sure he knows that.
Well, that's the point. And I mean, I'm sure that he's going to have made statements like, we're going to deport the Boris Wave and things like that in response to the challenge that he's having from the right. So it just, it, like, this whole thing of, I mean, like, didn't Zia Yusuf the other day come out and say, yeah, there are a bunch of countries that are going to go on a red list? It's like, well, why are you hiring them as your candidate?
I noticed that basically every country apart from Sri Lanka was on that list.
Weird coincidence, that. Yeah. Anyway, so, yeah, I mean, literally... getting the Boris Wavers as candidates. I mean, here's one who's doing his social media and campaigning in Bengali.
No, why not?
It's just, yeah. It's brilliant. It's just amazing. I mean, why? Because he's a Bengali man who's on Zia Yusuf's red list, but he can be a reform candidate. It's like, okay.
Yes.
Clearly. I mean, just bonkers, preposterous nonsense, incoherent. Why is this happening? Why is this happening? Why would he be taking any of these people rather than just the millions of disenfranchised native British people who would be his natural constituency?
Yes, but the problem is if you take those people, there is a slight danger that one of them will be at least half an inch to the right of Nigel Farage, which is, of course, a hanging offence.
And a week early.
Yeah. And nobody... could be an inch to the right of Farage a day early without getting binned.
Absolutely true.
Well, and unless you're a Bengali national, in which case your political, as long as it's for Bengal, then you can be a nationalist.
Yeah.
But not in reform, you can.
If you're Bangladesh first, that's the right kind of BNP.
Oh, yeah, that's what we want.
Yeah, exactly. But that's precisely the point. And so there have been many people who have noticed, and I've seen people saying, I got... cold call to be a reform candidate today. I'm a member of the Labour Party, right? So it's just like, right, this has been coming up so much that we'll watch this, because he's doing a press conference and one of the journalists is like, there have been reports that your party is cold calling people to be candidates. Are you really that desperate?
Moving on. Lewis Warner, ITV News Central.
Hello, thank you. The Tories say you've been cold calling people in Birmingham, basically begging them to stand in the local elections. Is that true? Have you been cold calling people? Are you struggling to get enough candidates? Or can you promise that you will have a full slate of candidates across the West Midlands?
I can promise you right now there'll be a full slate of candidates across the West Midlands. End of. What I can also tell you is that the other party, I mean, the Labour Party, have actually been advertising online for candidates in the northeast of England.
Have you been cold calling people, though?
No, cold calling would be very, very fruitless, wouldn't it? Have we called paid-up members of the party to see if they want to get engaged? Yes, but of course, every party does that. I think you'll find, Lewis, across the country... I mean, I've given you a West Midlands answer. I think you'll find across the whole of the country with over 5,000 candidates, if you include Scotland and Wales as well, that all parties are... We know all parties are running very, very fast. The deadline's 11 a.m. on the 9th, so in 2 days' time. So everyone's got a struggle on. But from the...
Well, you've known that deadline's been coming for a long time.
Yeah.
You have the insurgent party with allegedly 270,000 members, although you took the membership tracker off your website.
They did. They did.
4 months ago, was it? So we don't know how many you've got now. And we're getting repeated reports of people saying, oh, they keep cold calling me to stand as a candidate. You're taking literal Boris waivers as candidates.
Yes.
All implies you can't find any native Brit candidates.
Shall I tell you the story of how I became a candidate?
Yeah, go on.
Because everybody knows that I was a candidate and I got chucked out because I was basically 1 inch... Well, I'm more than 1 inch to the right of Raj now.
But at the time,
I was 1 inch to the right of Raj, and so they had to get rid of me. But the story about how I became a Reform candidate in the first place is even more interesting. So I had been loosely involved with UKIP back in the day, like you were.
Yeah.
And I hadn't really done anything with Reform. And I just started getting this series of emails, which when I read them, it was like it basically just treated me like I was the candidate for Sevenoaks. Now, I hadn't had any conversation with them. I just started getting these emails. It's like, oh, we're supporting you in Sevenoaks and stuff like this. And I had to read a few emails because it wasn't clear, because it was clearly joining a chain somewhere on of a whole series of candidate support emails. And I thought, well, yeah, but I'm not the candidate for Sevenoaks. So I rang them up and said, do you think I'm the candidate for Sevenoaks? Because I'm not. And they were like, well, why don't you... Why aren't?
Would you like to be?
Why aren't you the candidate for Sevenoaks? It's like, well, I live in Winchester. And so, I don't live anywhere near Sevenoaks. Why would I be the candidate for Sevenoaks? And they're like, oh, okay, fair enough. So anyway, those emails stopped. And then I started getting emails treating me like I was a candidate for Winchester. And then I was like... Oh, okay, right. Well, I guess I'll go along with it then.
Yeah.
So this is why I was so completely unbothered as to when they chucked me off, because I didn't actually ask to become a candidate in the first place. So maybe that's how Mr. Coker and Mr. Roy and the other Boris Waver, maybe that's how they ended up as candidates. They just didn't object strongly enough to the spam email that basically listed them as a candidate.
Maybe. But that's the point though. Like of all of this is that. I mean, back then, I bet they didn't have too many troubles finding candidates, right?
Well, they must have been something. That's how I ended up one, but okay.
Maybe. But that was like 2021, something like that, 2022, yeah. Something like that. So they're at the time doing quite well in the polls, and they are the insurgent coming up at that time. Now, when they're coming down to basically seem to be scrambling for literally anyone. Yeah, they can be foreign nationals. We don't care if they're foreign nationals. And yeah, we're cold calling people, obviously.
It would be nice if you visited the UK in the last 10 years, but whatever.
I mean, it's not mandatory.
Anyone. Yeah.
You know? And then you've got his pitch to basically Rupert Lowe's rhetoric. No migrant who enters Britain illegally should ever be allowed to walk our streets. They will be detained and deported under a Reform government. Who uses the rhetoric detained and deport?
That's a restore line.
Exactly. That's Rupert Lowe. That's literally one of the lines that got him kicked out of Reform. Detain and deport. And there are the mixes going around of him saying over and over. And suddenly Farage is saying, why? Because they're on the decline. They're realizing the sand is flowing between their fingers. I mean, this Reform is the only party putting the British people first. That's Rupert Lowe's sign campaign.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a restore line.
Word for word, that is. And there's no way he would have said that 6 months ago.
Cheeky beggar.
You would have got kicked out of your party for that.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But again, you were a week early and an inch to the right of Farage, but now he's got to the Britain first position. So, have we? Have we got there, Nige? So, anyway, I thought we'd have a look at then why this is happening.
Yeah.
So, we can see that the sand is pouring through their fingers. They're on the downswing. They're scrambling for just any... We need candidates. Yeah, okay. We knew the May elections were coming for a long time, but no, we're right down to the wire now. Well, on the other side of it, you've got Rupert Lowe. Now, you've got the Restore Britain party coming in at 8% here, but this was a commissioned poll from Find Out Now, so it prompted for Restore Britain. Yep. And so everyone's like, well, don't know if that's really a thing. Are you really turning up? Well...
Yeah, but I mean, Reform, Greens, Tories, Labour and Lib Dem were also prompted for.
Yes, and they're...
It's not like it's like, would you like to vote for Restore Britain or anyone else? No, they were listed alongside all of the rest of them.
But what's interesting as well is, well, look at the polling there. That's basically the averages that we're seeing on the poll polls.
Yeah, it is.
Reform at 25, Greens at 19, Tories and Labour middling along at the bottom.
Yeah.
Like, that's actually quite representative.
It is.
If we go back to
the point.
Poll of polls is really not unrepresentative at all. Like, that's actually really, really close. So it's
one less point for Labour, one more for Lib Dems, but otherwise it's the same numbers.
Exactly. It's really, really close. So to say, well, you can't trust it. Well, I mean, I'm not saying you can trust this, but on all of the other metrics, it seems to have been nailing exactly basically where everyone is. So I don't feel inclined to be like, oh, yeah, but when it comes to Restore Britain, it can't be. And so it's like, but everyone's like, okay, well, no, they commissioned this. Okay, yeah, fair enough, fair enough. What about a poll?
But nobody would dismiss a poll on the basis that that one of the prompts was Reform or Greens or Tories or anything like that.
Of course not. But, okay, fine. So let's go to a poll where they weren't prompted, because they made their first appearance in a YouGov poll this week at 4%. Now this, and again, look at the numbers, right? Yeah. Reform, 24%. Conservatives, 19%, which seems unlikely.
Oh,
Labour, 16%. Greens, 16%. Lib Dem, 13%. Restore Britain, 4%. Now that is particularly interesting because this wasn't prompted.
Well, you had to make the effort to go, no, other, type it in.
Exactly. And they explain that here, where they say, look, and they in fact, I'm going to read it out just because it's one of those things where you can see that they're like, we know we should be prompting this, right? They say, polling companies typically initially prompt for the main nationwide parties, as well as the SNP in Scotland and Plaid Cymru in Wales, and give them the option of some other party. For people who say other, a follow-up question will typically then ask which other party they support. But above a certain level of support, only including a party in the second follow-up question can risk understating their support. Exactly where the crossover is and at what point the party should be promoted in the main prompt is a matter of judgment. In the past, YouGov has normally addressed this issue by doing test polls with no prompting at all. Such tests today show similar levels of support for Restore Britain and your party to when they are included only in the second follow-up prompt, suggesting it is an accurate reflection of their public support. Nonetheless, given the interest in the parties and the fact their respective levels of support have remained consistent over recent weeks, we do feel it is appropriate to report them separately. As in, they're not prompting yet, but they are actually included.
They're having the conversation about prompting.
They're not just shoving them in other, right? So that's very interesting because that, and what that says is actually, yeah, maybe it is 8% because it's 4% when it doesn't get
prompted. Well, and look how other absolutely collapses when you spit out Restore.
Of course, of course. But yeah, the 8% is, you know, if you're going to do these sort of poll of polls, then 6% average for a party that is, what, 3 weeks old now, is roughly where it is. I mean, Farage's, oh, you're only going to get 1%, isn't looking so credible now, actually.
Not going to be 1%.
It's way beyond that already.
Yep.
And so that's pretty rough for Farage, especially given the consistent decline of his own party. This was the moment that I've been waiting for a long time, when just unprompted in commissioned polls, Restore starts turning up. That's when you know, okay, no, we've got traction now, and this is really, you know, we've got our teeth into something, and now we're pulling. And this was after the nationwide advertising campaign as well. So just to be clear, if you're a Restore Britain supporter and you're watching, those nationwide advertising campaigns with a party that will put Britain first, that works. That's what people have been going, oh, thank God, someone's going to actually prioritise our concerns for once.
I mean, it's crazy that putting the needs of the British people as your number one priority would have cut through, but apparently it does.
It's remarkable that it would need to be written down.
Yes.
Right? But yeah, as you say, apparently it does. I mean, you know, Nigel Farage and his Chagos first campaign. I mean, you saw the Chagossian campaign he was running. It's like, we need the Chagossians to have a homeland for their people.
Yeah, I mean, if only Reform were as nationalist for the British as they are for the Chagossians.
It would be great. But anyway, so, why? Why are Restore Britain finding this traction? And the answer is, of course, because they are just basically no-nonsense, straightforward, right-wing politics. Here's Rupert Lowe on The Bow Show, which was, if you didn't watch it, go watch it. It was yesterday's Bow Show, was it? Mm. Where Rupert Lowe just called in and just explains. And what I like about this is a lot of people are online are hoping, oh, Rupert Lowe is going to be like extreme right-winger. It's like, no, he's not an extreme right-winger. He's a very sensible right-winger. This is just sensible right-wing politics to begin from where we actually are. Because a lot of the problem with like the online discourse is that when things are agreed and become like, you know, the common knowledge and desire of those people, like the dialectic keeps moving forward, right? And so they're like, yeah, you know what we're going to have to do is deport every single follower, foreigner. And they're like, huh, Rupert Lowe doesn't say that. It's like, no, of course he doesn't say that. He's a mainstream MP. He is heading in the direction you have already been in, right? That's what you have to bear in mind. Rupert Lowe is not going to come out with hardline rhetoric. He's going to come out with sensible rhetoric that prioritizes the British people and is that direction of travel.
We should start with the people arriving illegally, and we should detain and deport them. We should then find the people living here illegally, and we should detain and deport them. Illegal means illegal in my book. And, you know, if you or I do something illegal, we end up in court, which is what happens when you break the law. And illegal means breaking the law. And then I said I would turn my attention to, after I deported the 10,500 foreign criminals in our prisons, I would turn my attention to those people who are living here, who've come here and who have effectively been welcomed here, who are effectively not contributing to Britain, who are claiming benefits, and who are a cost to the British taxpayer. And I will turn my attention to them, and rather in the same way that Denmark and Sweden are doing it now, having pursued very misguided policies in 2015, they are actually encouraging people to leave the country who are not making a contribution.
Completely sensible.
Yes.
Not like radical, goggle-eyed, neo-Nazi rhetoric or anything like that. It's like, no, we've got a load of foreigners here who are draining the system that you and I are paying for. Why are they here?
And it tells you everything about British politics that a series of statements as mild and as common sense as that is considered an anathema to the entire existing political system, even Reform, which pitches itself as a radical party.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no way Nigel Farage would get to the point where he'd say, yeah, foreigners on benefits can go home, which is what Rupert's saying here.
No.
He would never
say. No, you'd try and recruit them as candidates. Like, no.
Not even an exaggeration. But that's the point. It's no nonsense, straightforward, just right-wing politics that prioritises the interests of the British people, right? And just to be clear for anyone listening who's like part of the online right, who's been part of the dialectical sort of echo chamber advancing, it's like, you know, what we need to do. Don't expect your politics to be reflected from there. Expect just the beginning steps, and that Rupert has very sensibly said, no, this is the thing, and then that is the thing. And that gets the country back in the right direction. The direction of travel has to be realigned, right? You having your fantasy end goal of whatever you think is going to happen. No. Put that out of your mind, because that's you making up a fantasy in your head to console yourself with the complete degradation of the country.
Well, and it's also, even if you are wedded to that, it's a lot easier to get to it once you've got...
The mountain is climbed one step at a time.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. So, calm down. And the reason, again, not just straightforward, no-nonsense, clear right-wing politics that just is... in everyone's interest, like, you know, and this isn't dividing on race or anything like that. If you've been here for 30 years and you've been paying taxes the whole time, yeah, you want that too, right? You want these parasites. Wait,
is divided on, are you British because we're going to put the British first? I mean, that's a perfectly sensible dividing line to have.
Absolutely. And lots of foreigners who are here who are happy with Britain being run as a British country are also on that train. No, I didn't come here to be a welfare sponge, and I don't see why, you know, because they pay taxes too. So completely sensible, right? And then you've got the other things that he's doing, as he revealed on Bo's show yesterday. The rape gang inquiry report will be published soon, and I'm sure we'll be doing a lot of coverage on this, because from what they posted, the snippets that they posted out of it, just horrific. But the point is, everyone's been saying they're going to do it, and who is the one politician who actually did it?
And it's incredible, Rupert's journey into this, because the reason he did this in the first place is not because he originally made this pledge. He was sat next to Nigel Farage when he made the pledge, and he was like, well, okay, I'm in the same party as Nigel Farage. When he stood up and said that with him as my leader at the time, that bound me. Mm-hmm. And so even after he was chucked out, he was like, no, I have to fulfill that pledge. I'm going to do it. And he did it. And Reform still haven't done it.
Yes. And not only that, but Reform have kind of dismissed him over it and poured scorn on him, saying, well, it wasn't a statutory inquiry. It's like, no, it wasn't. But giving the victims a platform to be properly heard, where they're not going to be hectored by Labour councillors or lawyers or whatever, to shut them up, was probably the most useful thing.
This is leadership.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But also it's honour. Right. He was bound by an oath you made, Nigel, and he carried it out, and he went through, like, it was a long process. It was an expensive process.
Mm.
And it was an uncomfortable process. Right. It was horrible. I've spoken to him since. It's horrible being sat there having to listen to these horror stories over and over and over. And you're just like, my God. And so when that comes out, we'll do a deep dive into it, because you need to know how things have been. And what
I don't want to know.
No, but you need to.
I need to know.
You've got to look these things in the face, because this is what the establishment have covered up. And the final thing is that he's got absolutely no concern for liberal pieties. And this, like, you don't know what he's replying to here, do you?
I'm going to take a wild guess. Somebody was trying to shame him for not internalizing some liberal piety.
Well, that's exactly what it is.
Was it? All right,
but yeah. Unbelievable diversity at a very well-attended Restore Britain branch. And he's just like, nobody in Restore Britain gives a shit.
That's not the metrics of which you should be caring about.
Well, and that's the point that we've been looking for this whole time, right? It's like, no, the Liberals can't shame him. And that's the problem. That's the difference between him and Farage.
Yeah,
Farage, no, look at my Boris waivers. Look at my foreigners. They're literally Indian and Bangladeshi or, you know, Nigerian nationals. No. I care about diversity. Yeah, I know that's the problem, Nigel.
Yep.
You care about all of this. Rupert wants to get the problems fixed. Yep. And this is the superpower that Zach Polanski has been demonstrating. And as you've been pointing out, you think that the future is going to be Greens versus Restore. And to be honest with you, I think you're right. Because if you look at the demographics of these things, right, it's some younger people, some slightly older people, but all of these people, you can tell, are like middle-aged, have jobs or small businesses, have families, and are invested in the country.
Well, even the older people, they're Gen X. They're not... Have you seen a Reform?
Yeah, they're all silver haired.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, the older people are like, you know, our age or a bit older, sort of like, you know, late 50s maybe, but not retirees.
No.
Right? And this is consistent. This was at the Swindon Restore Britain.
What I see is a bunch of people with kids...
Yeah.
And they're thinking, how the hell is my child going to buy a house?
It's just like us.
Yeah.
It's just like us. It's the people who are actually working and paying the taxes.
Yes. Yes.
Who are like, no, I've got a business. I've got a future. My family are here. My business is here. How can we survive this?
Yep.
And it's over and over. And the branch is growing really, really nicely. I mean, here's John Perry from Havant branch. I don't even know where that is, to be honest.
Hey, Brighton.
Right. Okay. There we go. But his membership's increased by 27%. In the past month, actually. So the branches are growing really, really well. And here's a great post by Frank here, who is saying, look, in Scotland, we're seeing massive response to this as well, right? And he explains in great detail, but it really, really sums up at the bottom here, right? Because he's like, look, we're not radicals. We're not insane people who are just hateful or anything like this, right? But he gets to the bottom here, and there's a great... it's a very long post, right? But there's a common thread that's running through all of these memberships that they want Scotland, in his case, but Britain, to feel like home again, right? A place where your values mean something, where your voice counts, where your kids have a fair crack at a decent life without being made to feel ashamed of who they are or where they come from, right? That's what this is. We need to restore what's lost before it slips away for good. The window won't stay open forever, and thousands journey across Scotland, and of course the rest of Britain more broadly, understand that better than anyone else. And that's why they're all those people of this sort of age cohort. Like, no, I remember what the country was like when I was young. And it wasn't like this.
No.
I have to do my part. And so, honestly, I think it's worth us then getting into the demographic clock that is ticking that I alluded to at the beginning.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is because, I mean, I will do that Brokenomics on the triple lock and, yeah, and the whole boomer situation. But, I mean, my starting process is just to start looking at some sort of fundamental data.
Yeah.
And actually, it screams something to you as soon as you start looking at it. And so basically what I got here is the generations. So starting the silent generation, baby boomers, Gen X, millennials, Gen Z and Gen Alpha, who are, they're all under 18 at this point.
Yeah.
And I've used, because the definitions can vary slightly as to which year, so I put down the years that I'm using, what the current age range for those individuals are, and then how many of them are there in the voter pool. So of course with the Gen Alpha there's zero of them in the voter pool because none of them are 18 yet. Now when you look at it like this, okay, you can see that the baby boomers, even now, even though they're sort of in their should we say mortality window, 62 to 80, still 13 million of it. It just goes to show what a large generation they were, what a disproportionate influence they have had throughout their entire lives. But we're at a point where the millennials are slightly larger.
Yeah.
However, what you've got to take into account is their propensity to vote.
Yeah. And the boomers have had, like, you know, a lot more attrition than the millennials.
Yes.
As in, they're older. They're a lot older, you know.
When you take into account the propensity to vote, you can see why the boomers get pandered to so much. So their realised voters are 9 million, and that is just stronger than everybody else.
Yeah.
Yes, of course, it used to be strong. You can see, I mean, compared to the silent generation, we're fairly small. And you can tell that the silent generation was a small generation because Gen Xers are largely the children of the silent generation, and they're a small generation. So you can see just how dominant the baby boomers were.
A lot of the boomers did have kids fairly young, but only had two kids as well.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and then you'll always have a percentage of each generation that doesn't have kids.
Yeah.
So the Gen X is a definite step down on that, and that's us.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly, and I should just provide the proviso, because there's always people who sort of hit the caps button and start tapping whenever we mention me. I'm not saying that the baby boomers or any other generation are a monolith or hive mind that all think the same way.
Yeah.
But evidently, if your policy set is things like really doubling down on the triple lock, that is obviously a boomer coded policy, which you are pursuing for the boomer vote, even if you individually don't agree with that particular aspect of it or not.
The millennials are not worried about their pensions. They're worried about trying to buy a house.
I don't think the millennials have any expectations of getting a pension.
I don't.
Some of the Gen Xers might have an expectation of getting a pension, but we're both Gen Xers and we don't.
We're the younger end of Gen X, and we don't think we're getting pensions.
Yeah, we're very close to the end of, I think within months or something, of it running out. So anyway, so realise voters. You see why. If your strategy, like Nigel Farage, is as far as I want to win the next election, you double down on the boomers. Because they give you by far the most realised votes, and the Gen Xers, you know, they're probably starting to think about their pension a bit. Maybe one or two of the more naive millennials might think they actually get one. Of course, they won't. But you can see the strategy.
Hard to believe that beyond Gen X, there's any concern about pensions at all, other than in the other direction of stop triple locking me out of existence, please.
Yeah. And you know, I can't speak for all Gen Xers, but sod it, I will. You should just take it away from us. Take it away. We got. I mean, I suppose it's going to be a little bit rougher at the top end. You see, the top end of Gen X is 61. Blimey.
I mean, yeah, they're in their 60s.
Yeah, but I mean, certainly the younger end, they've got time to make alternative provisions. I mean, I'd willingly give it up if it applied.
I just don't think we're going to get it. So it doesn't matter whether I want it or not.
The money's going to run out.
Yeah.
Okay. So now let's look at. So that's today. What is it like in 5 years? Because, like I say, the boomers and the silent generation are in their mortality window. Well, suddenly 5 years is a very different picture. Even Gen X outnumber, as realised voters, the boomers. Even Gen X.
I calculated this the other day. Did this inspire what you're doing here? Because I calculated how many voters reform would lose just between now and 2029.
I don't think it did, but and it maybe subconsciously, like, if you mentioned that to me,
because that's what is it, nearly 3 million or 2.5 million boomers just on attrition alone in 5 years, right? But in 3 years, I had ChatGPT calculate it, and then I was like, right, what percentage of those are Reform voters based on the current polls? And Reform are going to lose 500,000 voters just on age.
Yep.
And that's just from the boomers. That's not even from the silent generation.
Yes.
So it's one of those things where it's like, you're on a clock.
Well, exactly. I'm going to talk about clocks in a minute. But in just 5 years, and the reason I just did it today in 5 years is because we don't know when the election is going to be. I mean, all sorts of things could happen. So I just thought I'd just pick round numbers. Yeah. So even Gen Xers overtake boomers at this point. Yeah. And Gen Xers have children who are trying to buy houses. Certainly the younger one. I mean, we do. I mean, actually, I mean, my children are Gen Alpha. So I actually skipped two generations.
Yeah.
I know you've got Gen Alpha children as well. I don't know if you've got Zoomers.
I've got two Zoomers and two Alphas.
Right, okay.
Alphas are a lot more demanding than the Zoomers.
Right.
Millennials, really making me like the Zoomers a lot.
Yeah. Millennials, they start to dominate at this point. In only 5 years, the millennials are the dominant force. And as a Gen Xers, we've always known, all Gen Xers have known, that our moment in the sun is never coming. We're getting skipped over immediately. But Gen Z starts to come through at this point, because, you know, there's
this is why we need the Gen Z, Gen X act. Boys, we're with you.
Yeah, exactly, because again, they're a slightly smaller generation, but their propensity to vote is rising. And then look at it in 10 years. Right, the boomers are an X force in British politics
they're
in 10 years.
Their pensions.
Silent generation, hardly factor at all. Gen X, have a little bit of influence, but not much. But yeah, millennials and Gen Z.
Well, no, we're going to be a fairly powerful voting bloc in 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, but then, I mean, that what that gives you is...
going to get our pensions in the end.
Yeah. but I mean, the Gen X, they have grown up knowing that their children struggled with getting a house. But maybe their children do get a house. Millennials struggled really hard to get a house themselves, if they even do within the next 10 years. And their kids sure as hell do. But Gen Z and Gen Alpha, I mean, they're just looking at an absolute cliff.
I mean, one thing I've noticed about Gen X is actually a lot more concern for the well-being of their children than the boomers had. I don't mean to sound crass or anything about that. And I'm not saying that, like you said, that's not all boomers or anything like that. But there's a general tone of...
Definitely noticed that.
Yeah, and Gen X seem to be far more sort of interested in having children as well, actually, than the boomers.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's a lot more pride in having a big family in Gen X than there is in the boomers.
Yeah.
And I'm particularly concerned, but I've noticed this, that the concern for their own children is higher than it was. But and the thing is, it's probably not even a surprise, because the boomers, as far as they're concerned, are still living in like 1975.
Yes.
So it's just like, okay, yeah, what's the world like? It's amazing. Yeah. Like, yeah, I bet it was amazing. I bet you've got no worries for your kids. But actually, I'm really worried, because my kids are still in the schools and I can see the bloody schools. You know, your kids have grown up and got houses by now, because we're your kids.
Yeah.
You know, we're fine. Yeah, great. But like, my kids are not going to be fine. So, you know, I want to help them while I can.
Well, I mean, it's getting to the point, if you're a younger Gen X or an older millennial, I mean, you're just hoping your kids don't get set upon by a gang of feral immigrants, let alone getting a bloody house. So anyway, where this gets us to, if you look at the sort of blocks, you've got the silents and boomers, who in 10 years' time are effectively an X force, and it's this Gen X and millennial block which is going to be powerful. And so then I wanted to talk about the sort of...
Let's just go back to that very quickly. And this is what's really interesting, is that look at Rupert Lowe's rhetoric, right? Do you see the post he made the other day? It's like, look, people aren't wrong for voting Greens. And this is the strategy Lansky took. People aren't wrong for being concerned about immigration. It's just not being managed properly. We're going to have infinite immigration. We're just going to manage it.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, no,
well-managed, fast replacement.
Yeah, no, that's actually awful and probably worse, to be honest with you, to have well-managed... replacement. But Rupert's taking the same tack on the other side. No, people are not wrong for wanting more economic fairness out of the way that the world is structured.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Cost of living crisis through the roof, buying house, good luck. Yeah. These are real problems that young people have to worry about. And so Restore are positioning themselves to inherit this demographic.
Well, this is my whole argument. If your only goal is to win the next election to make yourself Nigel Farage PM... then I completely understand the strategy.
Yes.
If your strategy is to change Britain...
save the country.
You don't do it in one election. No. It makes... I mean, this just explains perfectly why the Greens are doing well. And why? And I don't think Restore need me to tell them this. I think they understand this entirely. But the correct strategy for Restore is to go in for the younger,
yeah,
the younger demographic, because Gen X are not hostile to messaging for younger people because they understand the situation.
They're also the most reactionary people in the country.
Yes. Millennials are going to respond well to it because they have been living this for some time. Gen X are obviously going to respond well because they realise that the whole battles the millennials had, they have now got coming their way only on somehow an even harder difficulty setting.
Exactly the right way to frame it as well. Yeah, and the thing is, the millennials still had the advantage of growing up in schools that were mostly white British.
Yes.
Gen Z and Gen Alpha will not have that luxury.
No.
Right.
And it doesn't matter where in the country you live, by the way.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. And they are much more aware of difference than the previous generations are prepared to admit. Like, Nigel Farage is typically symptomatic of the boomers, even though he's actually a very old Gen X.
Yeah.
He's got typically symptomatic of, oh, I would never talk about race. It's like, look, man, you think the Gen Z kids are like, oh, I'm not going to talk about race when they're in school and there are gangs that each form? They all have to. They have no choice.
Yeah, they don't. Colorblind is not an option.
Absolutely not. It is a clear and present element in their lives. So that attitude, going. Absolutely going. 5 years' time, gone.
What all of this tells me is that the Greens are doing the right thing. Restore, I'm almost certain, will go down this line because what's the point of another party that is competing against Reform, Labour, the Lib Dems and the Conservative Party for the dwindling boomer vote? It doesn't make any sense. So I'm convinced that Restore, they don't need me to tell this, but they will be doubling down on the youth vote on this as well. What it tells me is in 10 years' time, we're going to be back to a two-party system, but that two-party system is going to be Greens and Restore.
Great. Honestly, that's great. That's a battle we can win.
Yeah.
Really easily.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, I mean, if you look at like the Gen X and Millennials alone could win the battle, but Gen Z and Alpha, what have they got to lose?
Yeah.
You know,
and they are ramping up in realised voters quite strongly over the next couple of elections. Yeah. It's four of them. Okay, you can ignore it when it's four of them.
Sure.
Not when there's nine million of them.
Absolutely. And the thing is, they've got every reason to be essentially sort of jihadis at this point, like, well, for a based order.
So I didn't call them jihadis in my analysis, but I've got something very similar. Because basically my argument is there were three clocks ticking at the same time.
Yes.
You've got the mortality clock. I mean, that kind of speaks for itself. Yeah. Yes, the boomers are the largest bloc currently, but that is going to shrink materially over the next decade. You've got the maturation clock. This is that as people get older, well, as Gen Alpha get older, they enter the voter pool. As Gen Z get older, millennials get older, their propensity to vote is going up.
Yeah.
But the most important one is this one. It's the grievance accumulator clock, what you might have called the jihadi clock.
Yeah.
What it's basically saying is that, look, even if the millennials do eventually get their home, and they do eventually get their family.
Yeah.
They've spent a lot of time on the grievance clock, where they know how ridiculous that they know that they're having their first kid at 36 or 37 or 38, and not at early 30s or late 20s.
We've got to fix the student loan problem.
Yes,
the interest on student loans is just highway robbery.
Yeah,
it's got to stop.
Yeah, and as I point out here, a 38-year-old who's locked out of home ownership is a hell of a lot more dangerous than a 22-year-old renter,
yeah,
because he has a higher propensity to turn out, and he's got a lot less patience.
Yeah.
And he's got the ability to affect things. And every single political party, apart from the Greens and I hope Restore, have inverted all of these clocks.
Yeah. Extract from the 38-year-old to give to the dwindling boomers.
Yeah, and then presumably what they hope. And that's why I specifically added the grievance accumulator clock, is presumably they hope they can win an election off the back of boomer-coded policies. And then at the next election or the election after that, they can just flip and that people are just going to forget. It's like, oh, yeah, I forget.
Nah, the resentment building up in the grievance accumulation clock isn't going away.
No.
You're not just going to be able to dissipate it. And this is why Labour and Conservatives are down so low in the polls. I mean, if we go back to the poll of polls. I mean, look at that, 18 and 17%. You think people are coming back to you?
No.
You think they're forgiving you for selling them out?
That is a bunch of very low salience voters who check politics every 4 years and haven't got the memo yet that those parties are dead.
But feel Zach Polanski's vibe. Because he is correct that there is a cost of living crisis.
Oh, no, I was talking about the Conservatives and Labour.
Oh, yeah. But look at the Greens at 19%, and that, you know, dominating.
Yeah, because what happens is the Greens and the Labour, well, probably mainly the Labour, but it's people who don't check politics more than every sort of 4 or 5 years. Yeah. Every so often, one of them checks in.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what's going on here? Oh, I think I'll take Green. And another one goes over.
Yeah. And that's exactly what's happening. Mm. But yeah, so anyway, right, this is one of those things where I think you're actually right. And again, like with all predictions, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, something
crazy. But I do know what's going to happen in 10 years.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We know how many of each cohort will be here, actually, in 10 years.
It's just not difficult maths, to be honest.
It's straightforward. And this is going to affect the way that British politics goes. Because, like I say, this... I hate to say boomer entitlement about pensions. It kind of is. Is going to become less politically viable, right? And actually, it will be the millennials hitting their 40s and 50s, with Gen X hitting their 60s, the younger Gen X hitting their 60s, who are going to be a huge cohort.
And I know we're going to get some pushback, but look, let me just bottom line it, right? The pension system is it is a benefit.
Yep.
It is part of the welfare bill, and it's a transfer from a less rich cohort to a more rich cohort.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Let's not say every boomer is rich.
No.
On average.
But the cohort as a whole, it's transferring money from the poor to the rich.
Yeah. And moreover, the benefits bill has just surpassed the tax bill.
Yes, I saw that. If it wasn't for this Iran stuff, I would have done a segment on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, in case you're wondering how much of your taxes are going to welfare, it's all of it.
Yes,
every penny
more,
and then a bit more as well. They have to take some from corporation tax and inheritance tax as well.
And again, for anyone wondering, actually 53% of the country are net beneficiaries of state money rather than net taxpayers.
Yeah, I mean,
47% of people.
Why can a country not prosper when there's more beneficiaries than there are workers? I mean, why not?
And the benefits bill has become larger than the amount that the Treasury takes in tax. It's like, look. This is not a system that's going to last. Right? This cannot possibly last.
Well, this is why, you know, both of us, even as Gen Xers, say, "Yeah, I've just written off the pension."
Yeah, I just
we're not going to get it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to make sure I've bought my house outright by the time I retire.
Yeah.
So any money I can still make doing YouTube videos is enough to cover my daily expenses, which are not great, you know, which are not very high. That's my plan. An old man rambling into the camera. Jeez. what am I supposed to expect? You know, what are my plans? But anyway, yeah. So basically,
selfishly, I hope you do.
Well,
30 years from now.
Well,
you'll still be there on camera, back in my day.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, I mean, maybe. And to be honest with you, the worst fates.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so that's what we think is going to be the general status quo moving forward into the future. And actually, I think it's kind of locked in at this point. I think the Tories and Labour are dying. I think reform is going to go down like it is. But I think Restore is going to continue going up because, honestly, Reform just don't seem to have the conviction.
Yeah.
They just don't seem to have the conviction for it.
I feel good about these predictions.
So do I.
Maybe not next week or the week after, but long term.
Yeah, because I mean, like I said, like if we go back to the you know, who is actually joining Restore Britain? If I can get the picture up again. What cohort is it? Well, it's the millennials and Gen Xers.
It's the key cohorts.
Yeah, who are going to be combined. 15 million in 10 years' time.
Yeah.
Like they're the ones who are actually joining Restore Britain now. And so it's one of those things where it's like, okay, I don't think you're going to get away from this, actually. It seems kind of that we're inevitable.